Welcome to Washington Today for Thursday, December 29th, 2022. I'm Gary Sterikoff. Thanks a lot for joining us today. Here are some headlines. The House January 6th committee has withdrawn its subpoena against former President Donald Trump. In a letter to Trump lawyer David Warrington, committee chair Benny Thompson wrote, quote, "As you may know, the select committee has concluded its hearings, released its final report, and will very soon reach its end. In light of the imminent end of our investigation, the select committee can no longer pursue the specific information covered by the subpoena." The committee had voted to subpoena testimony and documents from the former president at its October hearing, which was the final hearing before the November midterm elections. Southwest Airlines said it expects to return to normal operations on Friday. The announcement comes after the airline canceled about two-thirds of its schedule in recent days, including more than 2,300 flights today. Southwest has canceled more than 13,000 flights since its trouble began on December 22nd. According to the Associated Press, it's likely more than 1 million passengers were affected. The nation's other major airlines, they're back to full strength. Delta, American, and United together canceled around 30 flights by late morning today, according to FlightAware.com. And as we mentioned on Tuesday, the federal government is investigating the cause of Southwest's meltdown. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg and some members of Congress are demanding that Southwest pay stranded travelers for hotel rooms, meals, and replacement flights they booked on other airlines. Russia has rejected Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's proposed 10-point plan as a basis to start peace talks. The plan calls for the withdrawal of all Russian troops, the release of all prisoners, and commitments on issues like nuclear and food security. But Russia has insisted that Ukraine must first accept the annexation of Luhansk and Donetsk in the east and Kherson and Zaporizhzhia in the south. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov told the state-run RIA news agency that his country would continue to build up its fighting strength and technological capabilities in Ukraine. President Biden on Thursday marked the swearing-in of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu by saying that his administration will continue to support the two-state solution in the Middle East. Mr. Netanyahu was sworn into office for a third time after he teamed up with far-right parties to form a conservative coalition and win Israel's November election. President Biden said in a statement, quote, "As we have throughout my administration, the United States will continue to support the two-state solution and to oppose policies that endanger its viability or contradict our mutual interests and values." He also said he looks forward to working with Prime Minister Netanyahu, who he said, quote, "has been my friend for decades." And federal prosecutors have announced they are investigating the finances of Republican Representative-elect George Santos. The announcement by the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of New York comes as Representative-elect Santos has admitted to lying about key parts of his biography. CBS News first reported the federal investigation. House Republican leadership, including current Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, has not commented on the investigation. Representative-elect Santos admitted last week that he lied on the campaign trail about his family history, his education, and his work experience. You're listening to Washington Today.
When the 118th Congress convenes next week, there will be several dozen new members of the House, a handful of new ones in the Senate. Washington Today continues now with some of the farewell speeches by some of the House members who will not be returning for another term. John Yarmuth has been in Congress since 2007 and since 2013 has been the only Democratic member in Kentucky's congressional delegation. He is chair of the House Budget Committee. He did not run for re-election this year and gave his farewell speech on the House floor on December 13th.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, several years ago I ran into a former member of the House, and I asked him whether he missed it. He answered, "I don't miss the circus, I miss the clowns." Now that I'm in my final days as a member and I've reflected on my 16 years here, I'm going to tweak that line. I won't miss everything about the circus, and I will miss many, but not all, of the clowns. I also now understand why so many people are afraid of clowns. I definitely will miss speaking on the House floor, so I will use my last appearance in this historic space to talk about what I will and won't miss. I will miss the feeling that I'm part of history, if not always history I would brag about. I will miss the constant reminder that I have served in the same body as Abraham Lincoln, John Kennedy, John Lewis, and so many other amazing Americans. I will miss the serious, thoughtful, and often noble discussions about how we can make a positive difference in the lives of so many Americans, even if we rarely make as big a difference as we'd want. And I will miss the give and take of policy debates, even though I know there was never a chance the debates would change anyone's mind. On the other hand, I won't miss the reality that most of our rhetorical firepower is preaching to our respective choirs, and that too much of what we say comes from the devils and not the angels of our natures. I won't miss the constant emphasis on raising money and the apparent conviction of some that only gobs of money can persuade enough voters to win elections. I won't miss the frustrating reality that we rarely move quickly enough to deal with the challenges of a fast-moving world, and the fear that if this body doesn't figure out how to work more expeditiously, we will continue to frustrate our citizens. I will miss many of my colleagues, some of whom are now among my best friends, and yes, even some from across the aisle. They have broadened my perspective and reinforced my belief that, with all our flaws, we are essentially decent and caring people who try to find better ways forward for our country. I respect them and thank them for their service and friendship. They are definitely not clowns. I have so many other people to thank as I leave this body. Of course, I must thank my family for encouraging me to do this work and for excusing me for missing so much of their lives. And in recent years, my grandsons, J.D. and Rory, for being constant reminders that what we do here has implications far beyond the moment. I will be eternally grateful to the people of Louisville who have given me the extraordinary honor and responsibility to represent them here. As a former staffer, I knew that a great staff is essential for success. I've been blessed with phenomenal staff members throughout my 8 terms. Thanks to every one of you. I'm also grateful to the staff of the House Budget Committee, which always made me look more competent and knowledgeable as the chairman than I otherwise would have. Thanks to all the House support staff who served quietly and effectively to keep this body functioning. Thanks to the Capitol Police who protect and defend us and who showed the world on January 6, 2021, how brave and selfless they are. Thanks to all my committee chairs and ranking members whose examples kept me from screwing up any more than I did. Thanks and praise to Democratic leadership, Speaker Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, and Jim Clyburn for their friendship, trust, and inspiration. Finally, I want to thank the person who has been with me every minute of my 16 years in the House. If Julie Carr is not the best chief of staff ever to serve here, there's no better model to emulate. I often said that if she left me, I would retire the next day. Luckily, she stuck with me, and now she will also leave the House after 25 years of service to me and others. The citizens of Louisville are, unbeknownst to them, much better off because of her work, and I was a better member because of her intellect, judgment, dedication, and friendship. Thank you for everything, Julie. So I will leave the House, proud of my work, grateful for the opportunity to serve here, and committed to continue to serve our great country and its people. For the last time, Mr. Speaker, I yield back the balance of my time.
Congressman John Yarmuth, Democrat from Kentucky, on the House floor on December 14th. He's retiring from Congress this year after 8 terms. Connie Conway, Republican from California, has been in Congress for less than a year. She won a special election in June to fill the rest of the term of a congressman who resigned. And on December 14th on the House floor, she explained why she did not run for a full term in the November general election.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and the members that are here. While my service in Congress has been brief, it has been the privilege of a lifetime. When Congressman Devin Nunes, who was my congressman, his district was redistricted away, I felt that perhaps my prior service as a county supervisor, as the minority leader in the California State House, and a presidential appointee might lend me some expertise to finish the term for Congressman Nunes and represent the constituents of California's Central Valley. I must say that I felt very welcome here. The California delegation on both sides, I had served with many of them in other capacities, so I felt very welcome. And I want to mention very quickly my staff, my prior staff, my staff now. They know once you've served with Ms. Conway, you are a staffer for life. I also want to thank the staff of this building. Even coming here today, I got a little turned around. I know where I'm going politically, just not sure at the building, so all the staff has been very gracious. And I think they actually all know me by first name, the effervescent Ms. Conway. When I was sworn in, I promised the good people of California's Central Valley that they would be the only special interest I represent. I hope they believe that I kept my word. Congress is not a particular popular institution right now, and a good dose of the criticism is well deserved. Serving in Congress doesn't make you a hero and shouldn't bring any privilege except the privilege of serving this country. Instead of citizen legislators, we have many professional politicians today, and perhaps some Americans would prefer that more members serve just 6 months like I am, rather than for decades. Nevertheless, I've always had a healthy respect for anyone who puts himself out there and runs for public office. We need public servants to develop good ideas for solving problems, to present these ideas to their communities, and advance those solutions in Congress. In short, this country, the leader of the free world, is worth the conversations, the efforts, and the fights that happen here. And on the campaign trail, notwithstanding all the messy unpleasantness that goes with it, with the process. As Americans, it's easy for us to forget how rare and precious self-government has been throughout the world. Each and every day that I have stepped into this historic capital, I have stood in wonder and awe of how truly amazing this place is and how truly amazing the opportunity is to serve this country. In Washington, I have found that despite all the current bitterness in Congress, I'm getting a little emotional, there were a range of issues, including the California water crisis, in which there is a good chance for bipartisan cooperation. Moving forward, I urge my colleagues to explore every possibility to work together on water, wildfires, energy, and other pressing issues. Knowing that families are counting on us to solve the big problems that impact them daily. As my service nears its end, I'd like to thank my family. They did not take the oath of office, but they've certainly shared with me in this. My heartfelt appreciation, and I use the word heart, goes to my husband, Craig, who actually 8.5 weeks ago had a heart transplant and is doing well, thanks to God. My sons, Anthony and Tim, my dear grandchildren, Kane and Autry. I also can't forget our dog, Jake, who doesn't miss me, but I do miss him a lot when I'm here. Finally, I would like to say a few words about my constituents back home. The Valley's agricultural communities work hard to feed the nation. Most people buying their produce, meat, and milk at stores throughout the country have no idea where that food comes from or all the effort it took to get it to them. Maintaining the well-being of these communities is a national security issue. Unfortunately, many Americans will only realize that in the most dramatic way if conditions in these communities may be so difficult that people simply decide they can't continue working and growing any longer. In California, especially lately, Silicon Valley gets all the headlines. And while I'm sure the tech executives, deep down inside, are nice people, they are smart people, they don't feed a lot of the families. The Central Valley of California is a main pillar of our nation's food chain. Its residents are my heroes, people who get up every day, go to work, pay their taxes, worship at their place of choice, donate to charity when they can, and I think all they really want to accomplish is to live their best life and maybe go to their kids' or their grandkids' soccer games on the weekend. Most people don't live and breathe politics like we do, but their work ultimately funds everything we do in Washington, and we can never forget them, that we are here with the single purpose of serving them. So I'd like to sign off by expressing my love and pride in the people of the Central Valley, California's Central Valley, who sent me here in the first place and to whom I shall return. I yield the rest of my time, if there is any, Mr. Speaker.
Connie Conway, Republican from California, her farewell speech on the House floor on December 14th. She's leaving Congress after serving 6 months. Congresswoman Brenda Lawrence, Democrat from Michigan, decided not to run for re-election this year, first elected in 2014. She gave her last speech on the House floor on December 14th.
Mr. Speaker, I rise today to give my farewell speech on the floor of the House of Representatives. It has been the honor of my lifetime to represent Michigan's 14th Congressional District for the past 8 years. A few months ago, I announced that my family and I made this remarkable, tough decision that this will be my last term serving as a member of Congress. For 8 years, I have been given an amazing opportunity. An opportunity to serve and walk the halls of Congress, and I've enjoyed every minute of this journey. I'm deeply grateful to the people of the 14th District in Southeast Michigan who gave me their vote and trusted me to represent them in office. I have been representing Southeastern Michigan for 30 years. I am coming home. I was trained to be a public servant in local politics, where I was the first woman and the first African American to ever be elected to the position of mayor in the city of Southfield, for which I served for 14 years. I also served as a school board president and president of the city council. In this chamber that I stand, we debate issues and confront challenges on behalf of the American people. This thing that we call a democracy is defined by the vote of the people and someone stepping up for public service. I was raised by my grandmother, who migrated from Georgia to Detroit in the height of the American Civil Rights Movement. I remember watching her in tears as America marched, protested, and fought for a nation where we would not be judged by the color of our skin, but by the character, our content of our character. She installed in me the passion for democracy and vote. She told me, Brenda, if you work hard and get your education, there's absolutely nothing that you can't do in these great United States of America. For the past 30 years, I have learned how important it is to be accessible to my constituents, to act as their voices in the rooms that they cannot enter. I went to places of worship, met with union representatives, walked with the people, and made sure that the door was open so that every citizen I represented had an opportunity to have their voice heard. As a member of Michigan's congressional delegation, I am proud to have legislated on issues that are important to our great state of Michigan: water equality, union rights, justice, transportation, infrastructure, manufacturing and industry, housing, and education. I am most proud of using my voice to fight on behalf of my constituents. The diversity of my district truly represents the diversity in America. I represent immigrants. My district has an international border. I have the Great Lakes. I have one of the largest Jewish populations in the country. My district is majority African American, and I have a very large Hispanic population. Seeing the rich diversity in my district, I founded the Congressional Caucus on Black-Jewish Relationships to foster that relationship between those of us who are targeted the most for hate and for discrimination. We accomplished amazing work, and I'm proud of that legacy that I will continue to support and as a citizen of this country. I currently serve as the vice chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, which is led by my colleague and my dear friend, Congresswoman Joyce Beatty. I've been able to serve with some legends like John Lewis, Elijah Cummings, in that capacity. And I know that having the Congressional Black Caucus, the conscience of Congress, this Congress will continue to move in the right direction. As you know, I was a member of the United States Postal Service for 30 years. When I arrived in Washington, my top priority was to sit on the House Oversight Committee, where I could continue to fight for the survival and the efficiency of the United States Postal Service and fight for my postal family. I'm so proud that we passed the Postal Service Reform Act that we have been fighting for years. And also, I'm proud of my fight for the Flint water crisis to make sure that we have water in America that will not hurt or harm people and that we fight for clean water in America. I serve on appropriations where I'm vice chair of the Appropriations Committee, and standing there to say that the dollars that you pay go in the right place has been very defining. I want you to know that I thank my staff for all the support they've given me, and I look forward to coming home, and I'm excited to spend time with my family, my granddaughter, my children, and the community of Southeast Michigan. Thank you, and I yield back.
Congresswoman Brenda Lawrence, Democrat from Michigan, on the House floor December 14th, on her retirement from Congress this year after four terms. More farewell speeches from members of Congress when Washington Today continues in a moment.
Pre-order your copy of the Congressional Directory for the 118th Congress. It's your access to the federal government with bio and contact information for every House and Senate member, important information on congressional committees, the president's cabinet, federal agencies, and state governors. Pre-order your copy today for delivery in March. It's $29.95 plus shipping and handling, and every purchase helps support our nonprofit operations at cspanshop.org.
Welcome back to Washington Today, which you can get as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts and also on the C-SPAN Now mobile app. Next, two farewell speeches by members of Congress, both members of the January 6th committee. Republican Adam Kinzinger of Illinois did not run for re-election. Democrat Elaine Luria of Virginia did and lost to a Republican. First, Congressman Kinzinger, first elected in 2010, speaking on the House floor December 15th.
Mr. Speaker, it's with great pride that I rise today, and for the next few minutes, I'd like to reflect on my 12 years serving this body. I knew from a young age that I wanted to serve our nation. While I was still in college, I was elected to the McLean County Board, the youngest person ever to do so. In 2003, I was commissioned in the Air Force, a responsibility that I took very seriously and one I still serve to this day. Returning from Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom, I ran for Congress and I won. Well, at the time, I didn't have a family. I promised to myself to leave them a better country than the one that I inherited. Unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, I cannot in good conscience say that I have done that. When preparing this speech, I knew that reflecting on our country's past would be the guiding light to our destiny. What made the experiment of our great nation so remarkable was that the American people put their faith in their fellow citizens to tell the truth and to make difficult choices. We've taken these ideals for granted for far too long. Instead of using our platform to advance the well-being of our nation and our people, we've turned this institution into an echo chamber of lies. Coming home from war, I truly believe that American democracy was infallible. How could a nation that fought a civil war for the freedom of all, a nation that vanquished fascism and communism in Europe, how could it falter? How could we stand atop Mount Everest only to decide that we prepare to fight in the mud? I have sworn an oath, both in uniform and in this office, to protect this nation and its Constitution. While overseas, I witnessed the dangers that radicalization of beliefs can have on people in Iraq and Afghanistan. Sadly, since coming to Congress, I've watched how Republicans and Democrats have weaponized fear in much the same way. We must not abandon our values or our beliefs in the U.S. Constitution. We all swore an oath in this very chamber to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, not a political party and not a single man. Let us renew this belief while casting out those who take the unprecedented call to abolish this sacred document. Just as Lady Justice looks upon the Constitution in the old Supreme Court, one floor below us, we must remove the blindfold of politics and govern for all Americans when we're executing our duties. Where Republicans once believed that limited government meant lower taxes and more autonomy, today, limited government means inciting violence against government officials. Following the tragic Oklahoma City bombing,
former President George H.W. Bush publicly refuted those who used fear to gain support. In stark contrast, our leaders today belittle and in some cases justify attacks on the U.S. Capitol as, quote, legitimate political discourse. The once great party of Lincoln, Roosevelt, and Reagan has turned its back on the ideals of liberty and self-governance. Instead, it has embraced lies and deceit. The Republican Party used to believe in a big tent, which welcomed the tired, the poor, the huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Now, we shelter the ignorant, the racist, who only stoke anger and hatred to those who are different than us. Our constituents voted us in based on our beliefs, but we cannot use our faith as a sword and a shield while ignoring the fact that we are all children of God, that we are all Americans. To my Democratic colleagues, you must too bear the burden of our failures. Many of you have asked me, where are all the good Republicans? Over the past 2 years, Democratic leadership had the opportunity to stand above the fray. Instead, they poured millions of dollars into the campaigns of MAGA Republicans, the same candidates President Biden called a national security threat, to ensure these good Republicans did not make it out of their respective primaries. This is no longer politics as usual. This is not a game. If you keep stoking the fire, you can't point the fingers when our great experiment goes up in flames. Unfortunately, there are too few Republicans and Democrats that have the spines to stand up and put country over party. This is not how our founding fathers intended for our democracy to function, because, Mr. Speaker, our democracy is not functioning. When one party's megaphone echoes calls for a civil war, and the other tacitly and in some cases openly supports it, then we are clearly lost, Mr. Speaker. Much like the Titanic on its maiden voyage, if Republicans and Democrats don't urgently course correct, I fear we will hit the iceberg right in front of us. While our politics are more divided now than any time over the past 160 years, we're often reminded of the magic of America at its best. Following tragedies like the Boston Marathon bombing or Hurricanes Sandy and Harvey, Americans from all walks of life banded together to support their neighbors, regardless of their political affiliation. Through hardship, hope reigns. And with this in mind, we cannot allow the loudest voice in the room to become the voice of reason. While we in recent years have failed our constituents, there have been times where we have come together to find common sense solutions to some of the pressing challenges of our times. As a nation, we achieved more when we worked together. Americans deserve a democracy that values truthful leaders and real dialogue between our parties. It is my belief that we have to put aside our differences and remember that the nation itself will only survive if the people have faith in one another. Unfortunately, we now live in a world where lies trump truth, where democracy is being challenged by authoritarianism. If we, America's elected leaders, do not search within ourselves for a way out, I fear that this great experiment will fall into the ash heap of history. To millions of Americans looking for solutions, not lies, it is up to us to ensure that this ship does not sink. We're being challenged at home and abroad. We must not crumble under the gravity of this moment. So many men and women around the world would die and have died trying to achieve what we have in the United States. So many of America's sons and daughters, many of whom were my friends, have died protecting it. As we continue to navigate a challenging and changing world, we must remember the past. Whenever the United States turns its back on humanity, we all suffer the consequences.
Congressman Adam Kinzinger, Republican from Illinois, on the House floor, a portion of his farewell speech as he retires from the House this year after six terms. He is a member of the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. And so is Congresswoman Elaine Lurie, a Democrat from Virginia, who lost re-election this year to a Republican, as she was trying for her fourth term in Congress. She gave her departing speech on the House floor December 14th.
I rise today as we approach the conclusion of the 117th Congress and as I near my service, the end of my service in this esteemed body. As I reflect on the multitude of challenges this nation and the world have faced over these four short years and those that lie ahead, I thank my colleagues and our leadership for the seriousness and dedication with which they've tackled these challenging issues. I want to thank my staff in Washington who are here and those in our three district offices for your tireless dedication to the people of Virginia's 2nd District. You've assisted so many who needed a helping hand, everyone from farmers to shipbuilders across coastal Virginia. And I want to thank my family, my husband Robert, my daughter Violet. I couldn't have been here and served the district and the people of Virginia without you. I also want to acknowledge the strength and the bond of the class of 2018. You've been amazing colleagues and true friends, and I know that you will continue to be leaders focused on improving our country for the next generation. We entered Congress under a partial government shutdown, a legacy of a protracted battle of how to fund security at our southern border, a 35-day lapse in government funding, the longest in our history. On my first weekend in office, I visited a pop-up food bank for members of our Coast Guard, where the local community rallied behind our Coast Guard families who were starting the new year without a paycheck. This was a story of our community stepping in to care for one another that are so common that I heard across 4 years in every corner of our district. But there are also stories of how the distraction caused by political theater and political divisions can lead to unnecessary hardship. As we approach a looming deadline this year to fund our government, we should not let these divisions or rhetoric stand in the way of performing our fundamental role as Congress. On May 31, 2019, a day that remains etched in the memory of Virginia Beach, I saw the devastation caused by the first of two mass shootings that roiled our community. That day, 12 innocent victims left home for work before the Memorial Day weekend, a time that they looked forward to spending with their families at barbecues and the beaches. Yet instead, their lives were senselessly stolen by a shooter who entered the municipal center and indiscriminately opened fire. And again, just weeks ago, on the eve of Thanksgiving, a shooter opened fire in a local Chesapeake Walmart, where shoppers were grabbing their last-minute items for a holiday meal. This time, our community lost six more precious lives who would not join their families at the holiday table. Among those was a 16-year-old boy. This Congress has taken measures to prevent these types of tragic events in our community and yours. But as I depart, I implore my colleagues to continue to do more. The first time I stood in this very place to speak on the floor of the House, I rose as a Jewish woman to speak out against anti-Semitism, which has seen a rapid and alarming rise and has even reared its head among our colleagues in this own chamber in the forms of claims of dual loyalty to those who show support for Israel, our strongest ally in the Middle East. I look back on that first speech I made as a member of Congress and am even more concerned today about the rising frequency and pervasiveness of anti-Semitism. I implore my colleagues to continue their quest to root out this scourge of vile and pernicious anti-Semitism. In that first speech, I also mentioned my oath I took to support and defend the Constitution. But little did I know that 2 short years later, I would witness an attempt by our own president and his allies to subvert the Constitution and summon a mob to disrupt the counting of electoral votes from a free and fair election. On that day, January 6, 2021, lives were lost, these hallowed halls were desecrated, and the strength of our democracy was tested. I've been humbled to participate in uncovering the facts about that dark day in our history. I thank Chairman Thompson and Vice Chair Cheney and my colleagues on the staff of the January 6th Committee for standing on the side of democracy. I'm proud of the work we've done over the last two Congresses to support our veterans and their families. My Gold Star family's tax relief eased the burden on children of those killed in combat or deceased from service-connected disabilities. And I thank President Biden for making veterans' toxic exposure a priority. We passed the largest increase in access to veterans' benefits in our lifetime through the PACT Act, which included my Covenant Act, to provide health care to burn pit veterans. The threats we face as a nation continue to grow as we witness Russia's unprovoked invasion of Ukraine, Iran's persistent in pursuit of a nuclear weapon, and the rise of China threatening our maritime and national security. As we've heard in testimony, China is likely to attempt to take Taiwan by force in the next 5 years. This is our most pressing national security concern. The action or inaction that we take in standing up to China in this moment will determine whose values rule the remainder of the 21st century, the United States and our allies, or the Chinese Communist Party. That is why, as I depart, I urge my colleagues to take this threat seriously, to fulfill the constitutional task of Article 1, Section 8, to provide and maintain a Navy. If we fail to remain the predominant maritime power in the Pacific, frankly, nothing else that we do in this Congress will matter if we don't get this right. I thank you, God bless you, and I yield back.
Congresswoman Elaine Luria, Democrat from Virginia, on the House floor December 14th. She lost re-election this year to her Republican challenger. You can get more farewell speeches by members of the House and also the Senate who are leaving their offices this year at c-span.org, our video library. And thanks for listening to Washington Today. You can sign up for C-SPAN's evening newsletter, Word for Word, to get the stories Washington is talking about sent to your inbox every day. Subscribe at c-span.org/connect. Have a good night.
This week, watch Washington Journal's special Holiday Week author series, featuring live segments each morning with a new writer. Coming up Friday morning, former Assistant Secretary for Homeland Security under President Barack Obama and faculty chair of the Homeland Security Program at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, Juliette Kaya, shares her book, The Devil Never Sleeps, Learning to Live in an Age of Disasters. Watch Washington Journal live Friday morning starting at 7 Eastern for our special Authors Week series on C-SPAN or on C-SPAN Now, our free mobile video app.